Two mornings in a row, I sat at the top of the hill and just thought about flooring it. It's not that I wanted to die. I just didn't want to live in a world without Liam.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Let's do this. Welcome to the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan. I'm here, as ever, with Ryan and Matt from the Lily May Foundation. Anyone who would like to, if you're watching the live stream, drop a message tonight, ask a question either to Ryan or to Matt or to our guest, please do so. And let's introduce, all the way from Australia, it is Chris Woods. Hello, Chris. Can you hear us?
Morning, boys. Yeah, thank you.
Morning.
What time is it where you are?
5:50.
Wow.
AM. Yeah. Dan, AM.
I know.
Yeah, AM.
I always feel bad whenever we get an Australian. We've had a few Australian guests on now, and there's no other time. Like, because we do it, yeah, it's always literally in the middle of the night.
I actually had a sleep in. I normally get up at 4, but I set my alarm for 4:30.
Wow.
To make sure that I...
What time did you go to bed?
Yeah, that I was awake and ready to go.
Is that because of your job, Chris, is it?
I've always had those sort of jobs where it's like baker's hours.
Right, okay.
Like when Liam died, I had a coffee shop at the time, and I used to open at 4 a.m.
Okay.
So I was getting up at 2:30.
What? 2:30? That's not even nighttime. Yeah. That's not even the morning. That's still last night.
Yeah. That's a dentist.
Yeah,
favorite
there was
time.
Once upon a time where wow. That was definitely last night.
I don't consider myself an early morning person. I did a similar thing, is to get up at 5 a.m. most mornings for the best part of a decade when I was doing a morning radio show. And it's just a different world.
Yeah.
Because you're driving down like the main route in Birmingham. And I'd see, even at like 4:15 in the morning, there's the same guy running. And he'd always literally be at the same, passing the same driveway.
Yeah.
So it's weird how the timing's always, if it had been 1 minute either way, and everyone's just, and that made me just go, my first thought, and I'm not sure why I went so dark, was, oh, it'd be easy to kidnap them.
Cheers, Dan. when I go out at 6 in the morning, I think about that. Yeah,
because it's like I've got to.
I see it on a Monday morning when I go to the gym to do my classes.
See the same people there.
Yeah, same people. Yeah. Same one stood at the bus stop. It's the same people either on a bike or running or something like that.
Yeah.
But you've just missed my joke, and I can't believe nobody picked up on it.
Got what? Go on, do it again. Sorry.
So, Chris, what time did you say you used to get up?
2:30.
That's a dentist's favourite time. That is.
I got it.
Yeah, Chris is fake laughing. I like Chris.
No, no, no. No, it was a good one, mate. It was a good one.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast. Is it Brisbane that you're at?
Yeah, just a little bit further north of Brisbane.
And you are friends with, or have become friends with, one of our former guests and also one of our ambassadors for the podcast, and he's Matt McConnell. Now, what we would, as we always do, and we'll get to this in a moment, we'll hear about your story, and we'd like you to give us as much detail that you you feel you'd like to about your losses. Now, you've had five, isn't it, in total?
Mm.
In your own time, and Ryan and Matt will jump in with any questions during this, could you start wherever you would like to start with your, you've had five losses in total.
I had probably 6 to 7 years of fertility issues. We fell pregnant first in 2018 and then miscarried that pregnancy at about 8-9 weeks. And, you know, at the time we hadn't been through anywhere near the amount of stuff that we had now. And, you know, we're thinking, oh, it's still okay. You know, we're young, this, that, and the other. You, those innocent sort of thoughts that you have. Anyway, we went through a little bit more like fertility issues. We did one round of IVF that was unsuccessful. And then COVID happened and it wasn't too bad. Like, we did another round of IVF and in like 21, and Liam's pregnancy was a twin pregnancy.
Right.
And we miscarried the first twin at about that same mark, about 8-9 weeks. And there was no clear answer on what happened, but what the most logical answer was, that when that embryo was passing through, that's clipped his sac and split his sac, and yeah, more or less, you know, it was unrepairable. Yeah. And Beth's water broke at 15 weeks, and for that with Liam, and we didn't find that out actually until the 20-week scan.
Oh, really? Wow.
So yeah, we're in the 20-week scan, and they're like, there's no amniotic fluid. Mm. You know, this is really bad, blah, blah, blah. And basically we went home from that scan and just packed a bag ready, get ready for the hospital. And it just, yeah, anticipating that Beth could have gone, either got an infection or gone into labor at any point. Mm. And yeah, it just didn't happen. Beth started to develop signs of an infection around 25, 26 weeks. And so she was in hospital for the last 6 weeks of the pregnancy. And yeah, he was born at 30 weeks plus two via emergency C-section.
Right.
So yeah, that's June 22. We've had yeah. two more losses since then. Oh, as well. But the pregnancy that had the most yeah. like profound impact on me was, you know, was Liam's birth and death.
Chris, did they – so when you went for the 20-week scan and you were told that there was no amniotic fluid, what did they exactly say to you at that time? Did they prepare you that maybe Liam wouldn't make it, or did they prepare you in the respect to – you know, because I think we've spoken about this in the past where no amniotic fluid can have an effect on kidneys, urinary yeah. tract and stuff. Did they ever – prepare you for that, or did were you sort of left to your own devices and it was very much a let's sort of see what happens?
No, they did. Like we had all the information that we needed. And his more or less his cause of death was a lung condition called pulmonary hyperplasia.
Yeah.
So what that means is his lungs haven't developed, you know, in utero. And yeah, like we were so we went into the scan. You know, the sonographer did the scan or whatever. She didn't really say a lot during it. She kind of just went out and got the doctor, and he was the, you know, he was the one that sort of delivered us that news and said that, you know, that look, the situation that you're looking at, you know, he's probably got a 10 to 20% chance of survival. And so we went home from there. We got a referral to MFM, which is maternal fetal medicine, you know, high-risk pregnancies and everything like that. And I think on the Friday, we went and had an appointment with them and started the process in the hospital system.
What was it? What was the aim of that appointment and the process? What was it they were trying to do?
Just to explain everything that was, you know, all our options. We were given the option to terminate the pregnancy right then and there, but to be honest, we just couldn't do it. Mm. And we didn't want to either. You know, he still had a chance of surviving. Sure, it was slim, but at that point in time, you know, you're just holding on to whatever hope you've got. Mm. And it was more a case of like the longer the pregnancy goes, the better his chance of survival is. Mm. So yeah, we just went home and just waited. And you know, he still had movement, like he was still growing, like he was in like the 80th percentile. So he's still like a big unit for you know, for that gestation. Mm. So until, like, I guess our train of thought was until he's at a point where, you know, his organs are starting to fail and all the rest of it, then, yeah, we'll just crack on and take each day as it comes.
Mentally, yeah. It must be very, very difficult because, as we all know, we're blokes. We like to go out. We like to have a bit of a social life, whether that's going out for a beer yeah. with your mates or going to watch sport or whatever it may be. But your life's been put on hold for what is a long period of time because Yeah. You know, from 20 weeks, you're halfway through a pregnancy. So,
and it's every facet, every second of your... Yeah,
absolutely. And it must be so difficult. I mean, Chris, I don't know you as a person. I don't know what your... Yeah. What your social life, what your work life, stuff like that might have been. But it must be really difficult to go from probably being somebody that was quite active, which I get the impression you were probably that sort of person, to then just being, like you say, workbound. It must be very, very difficult, because psychologically that's going to have an effect on you on top of what you're having to face anyway.
I didn't necessarily think about me at the time. Like, I was there, you know, Beth needs me. And it was a little bit easier when she went into hospital, because she's in the safest place that she can be. And Liam was born via emergency section due to a cord prolapse. So at the time, like, Beth was in the bathroom, and so if that happened, you know, at our place, like at home in a shopping center, he is 1,000% dead. Yeah. Like, there's no surviving that, you know, if you're not within reach of a hospital. And so from the minute she hit the panic button to when he was born was 28 minutes. Wow. And like, that's
28,
you know, half an hour. Yeah. Like, you don't get that sort of,
no chance.
You don't get those opportunities, you know, if you're in everyday life. So back in answer to your question, wasn't really in my thought process, because, you know, my wife needed me and my son needed me as well. So I was more than happy. That's the role, you know, that's what I've got to do in that situation. So
it's interesting you say that, but just because it's there coming up with them stereotypes again that we mentioned when you just use the phrase the role, isn't it?
And
one of the reasons we started this was to encourage men to talk, and also you know, going down looking at certain stereotypes, which are, as Ryan's mentioned a lot, the men want to be the fixers, and the you know, something so brutal as this is, there is nothing, you're just absolutely helpless in that situation. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, I forgot my train of thought. Sorry,
that's me being an idiot trying to get my next question in.
No.
Chris, when you were talking there about, obviously, the prolapse and how quickly they got him out and stuff, that is one prime example of teamwork I've experienced before in a hospital, where you see all of those medical professionals jump into action. Is one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Honestly, it is phenomenal.
Everyone's got their little role, haven't they? Yeah. It just looks like craziness.
Yeah. But the hard thing then for me watching that is, right, what can I do? I can't do anything.
Nothing.
Because it's like, I'm not obviously there for that reason. But
you feel like a spare part in the room.
Naturally, you want to do something, but you can't. And it's... It's honestly flabbergasting how we talk about teamwork a lot, don't we?
Like,
you know, in sport and what have you. I don't think I have ever witnessed teamwork, or will ever witness teamwork, sorry, like I have during the birth of a baby.
Crystal said,
so it's a good point.
When we had Callie, like, I weren't there, but things went south very quickly with Callie, but she said that the nurse came in, or the midwife came in and said, don't worry about, as Ryan's already touched on just then, about the amount of people in the room. Everyone knows what they're doing.
Mm.
And like Crystal said, it all of a sudden was like just...
Is that really?
Must have been about six people in the room all of a sudden. But like the one person stood right by her, almost explaining what was happening and that. But everyone was just cracking on. As Ryan said, it's like... It's madness.
It's like clockwork, isn't it?
Madness. It's just madness. Like,
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's like clockwork. Yeah, everyone, each in their own little bits. So I have to back up, because I think it's in 3 and a bit years of doing the podcast, Ryan said it's the first time we've used the word flabbergasted, which is an old school word. You don't hear that word much anymore, do you?
That's a typical...
Flabbergasted. Well, you don't hear that.
It's an English word, isn't it?
You know, when do you hear it? Well, I want to hear it more in football interviews and stuff. Right. Yes, it's a good word. It's underused. We need to bring it back.
I, I did the Guys in Grief podcast. I don't know if I still hold this this honor, but they said I was the only one to use wanker and dickhead in the same podcast.
Well, that's great. Simply by just saying it now illustrate the point, you've now done it on this one, which is fine because we don't mind a little. We know we're all adults here and we're talking about something very difficult. Yeah. So
I can't think of a time where we've had wanker and dickhead. Yeah. Like div is mine. I quite like the word div. You absolute div.
Do you know that word? Is that a word in Australia, div?
No, I haven't heard that one.
I want to learn. We'll get back on track in a second.
The other one, can I just say before words in my head? The other one that Ryan says, which
I know what you're going to say.
I've never heard it before. And it makes me laugh so hard.
It's Australian.
Starts with a D.
Doyle.
So he brings in Doyle.
I also call people a Joey as well. You absolute Joey.
I remember watching Home and Away. Was it Alf Stewart in Home and Away?
Alf Stewart, yes.
And I didn't even know this. It just sounded like a series of letters put in no particular order. It's like, you flaming galah. What's a galah?
Chris?
It's a bird.
Is it?
It's a bird, isn't it? Yeah.
Can I eat one? Is it like a chicken?
Can you eat one?
It's like a pink...
like an emu.
Oh,
like a flamingo.
Flamingo.
Not a peacock, but it's kind of like... Kind of like that-ish.
All right. We're learning a lot.
Not really, but...
I'm going to have to Google it.
So, yeah.
It's pink.
Matt's just Googling pink galah. You might get some dodgy results if you do. Make sure your safe search is on.
Chris, I've been fascinated by listening to your story and how you've put it across, because like a lot of the time on our podcast we obviously delve into the loss and losses and how they are and stuff. Mm. And you know, you've given detail around it, which is like I said, I've listened quite a lot more than talk tonight and I've been fascinated by it. I just want to know, or I'd like to know, really, once Liam is born and once what happens with Liam happens, and I like to get into this a little bit, where, because we talk about men's mental health, where do you go from there? Like, I know it sounds like, and that's like a really daft question, I get that, right? Because obviously we know that it's hell, basically, but I'm just interested to hear your view.
Yeah, so the first... Three to 4 months after Liam died, I really struggled. I was back at work after 3 weeks and hated it. I was self-employed.
So you kind of had to,
so I didn't, you know, I didn't really have any option in that regard, but I went straight back to doing my normal hours at the coffee shop, you know, 6 days, you know, 60 hours minimum a week.
Dealing with the public as well.
Yeah, face to face, you know. And I'm a terrible liar. So, you know, putting on a brave face is just like, it's not in my DNA. I struggled there. It took me 6 psychologists to get in to see one that would see me. That had a massive, massively negative impact on me.
Say that again. It took 6.
Yeah.
As in, like, 6, you couldn't get appointments or there was just,
Yeah.
Wow. Did you not meet a threshold?
Reason, you know, yeah. You know, one was like, you know, availability. Right. There was another sort of, I'm not taking new patients type thing at the moment. You know, there were a range of reasons. Yeah. And being back at work, I didn't have the flexibility that Beth did to get to appointments.
Yeah.
But it was literally the first psychologist that she contacted, she got in. And that's... Like that's great. That's great for her. The only thing that I have an issue with is the imbalance in, like, just the imbalance in terms of, you know, the mother. Yeah, it's all good. You know, we've got appointments for you, but in my situation, like, how, you know, majority of guys would give up too after say, you know, 3 even. It's like, oh, it's too hard. You know, I'll self-medicate. And that's what I was doing. You know, I took myself off my anxiety meds and replaced that with alcohol every night. And that was a terrible set of decisions, but I just didn't really care about the consequences. And yeah, I just didn't give a shit, you know, where I ended up. And there were two days where I was, you know, contemplating suicide. Yeah. Yeah, it was just...
See, that's... Chris, thank you so much for your honesty, yeah, honestly, on this. Yeah, I think as well, because I think we mentioned you're 36. So I mean, as a guy, it's already in that danger stage, isn't it, as we keep it being told, for, you know, a danger age for...
Well, you call it
for tipping, men. The tipping, yeah. Mm-hmm. And no, when you make conscious decisions, such as the one when you said you came off your meds and you went onto the alcohol, you know... it's not a good idea, but you're in that. And I think because you're talking about it, and there'll be people listening to this at whatever point it is, might be a year after we've posted this up, is in that exact position right now, and they're going through that thought process and knowing that it's not the right thing, but it's what you need. It's the right thing in your head for you to do that moment, and then where it leads, and to admit about the suicidal feelings. Because a lot of people just avoid that, won't they? And we, you know, suck it up, be a man, you know, don't tell anyone, we're strong, no one can do anything to me. If you don't mind me asking, what was your, and if you can answer it, what was your darkest period? Or is there a specific moment when it all kind of like, okay, I've got to get a handle on this? When did you want to start caring, I guess, again?
Yeah, so there was two mornings where, like, I'd normally leave for work at about 3 o'clock, like get up at 2:30, leave for 3:00, and near our place, there was a bit of a hill, and the two mornings in a row, I sat at the top of the hill and just contemplate, like thought about flooring it. And, and it's not that I wanted to die. I just didn't want to live. You know, I just didn't want to live in a world without Liam. And I just couldn't handle it. Like, I couldn't handle it anymore. And so this is, you know, 3 o'clock later in the morning, you know, I'd call my sister, like bawling it, fucking losing it on the phone. And yeah, she talked me around a lot, but yeah, the two mornings sort of back to back. And, you know, those 2 days I went into work, opened the shop, put on a brave face, and oh, to be honest, like, I'm so fucking glad that I didn't do it, you know. And thinking about it now, I'm just so grateful that I'm alive and I'm able to help people. And yeah, it gets me upset thinking of it, like, not upset, but like, it gets me emotional thinking about it, because it's a line ball decision. Mm. No one apart from my sister really knew how bad I was at that time. I didn't tell anyone, you know, I didn't tell Beth. And that's probably the scariest part. Like, we've had conversations about it after, and I'm like, fuck, I just didn't.
How did she react? How did she react?
And my thought process, this is how like jaded and messed up it is. My thought process along that line was like, if I died in a car accident, then it's not as obvious as walking in front of a train. So I'm not, there's not that, you know, if Beth's not ready to talk about it with people and say he knocked himself, then she doesn't have to. Like, that's how messed up my head was at the time. And I haven't really said that. I haven't really said that publicly either, but as time goes on, I'm more comfortable talking about it. So, yeah.
Is what you're getting at here with, if I make it, and I'm sorry if I'm being blunt, but, you know, if it makes it seem more like an accident, then it's because there's the word selfish gets bandied about, doesn't it, with male suicide quite a lot when that happens. And was that, maybe that's some subconscious part, thought process that you were going through as, wow.
Just that shame, you know. Shame. She doesn't have to deal with that shame. And it's a massive, you know, it's a massive problem everywhere in the world. And just the resources are just not balanced. I'm not making excuses. All of my decisions were my decisions and mine alone, and I live with the consequences and all the rest of it. But six psychologists as opposed to one, it's fucked.
I think this is where...
Yeah, I hope that it's better.
This way, you just got to talk, haven't you?
Now.
Just talk.
I think what people don't realise, certainly with men and after baby loss, is you become I mean, I'm obviously going back to 2010 now when we lost Lily. So in my opinion, a lot has changed in 15 years. Certainly over here, I obviously can't speak for what it's like in other countries, but I know over here it's certainly become more prevalent now for men to open up to talk. There's a lot more out there for men to open up to talk. And I'm not just talking in general. I'm also talking with baby loss as well. When you think of the charities, the podcasts, things like that now that are popping up. The one thing that I think people don't realise at the time when certainly when we lost Lily, is you have to become a very, very good actor very, very
You've
quickly.
You've said this before, yes.
You have to, and it's like Chris said there.
Yeah, Chris is nodding.
You go to work, you put your face on, and you're acting. You are literally acting when actually inside you are dying, and I mean dying. And it's not even an emotion or anything that it's easily identifiable to be able to discuss and openly talk to somebody about it, because it's like an absolute mind fuck. There is no logical explanation for how you're feeling, because it's obvious why you feel shit. I wasn't very academic. I found it very, very difficult to sit in an exam and write something down. So if I had a history exam or something where it was based on fact and you had to get it from your head down onto paper, I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Just couldn't do it. I wasn't that sort of
but
person.
Verbally,
yeah. I could do it. This was the polar opposite.
It's the analytical and the...
Just couldn't do it. Just couldn't.
It's interesting.
It was like there was something, you know, like you see the films where you have the devil on the one shoulder and the angel on the next, and the devil's the one that's going at you saying, you know, do the wicked things, and the angel's saying, no, you must do it like this, blah, 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 blah. It's like you've got a permanent somebody saying, don't let it out, don't let it out, don't let it out, because you're going to be a fucking burden.
There's something else that... It's just popped into my head when you mentioned the devil and the angel. There's this audio, but I listened to it. It was probably about 10 years ago. I think you can still find it. I think it was either called the monkey or the chimp paradox or something like that. And it was about it essentially boils down to being mindful in the moment of who's driving your brain. Is it your instinctive part, or is it the, you know, the one which wants the instant gratification opposed to long-term gain and all that? And it was really, it was interesting. Obviously so interesting. You know what I'm like, I didn't finish it.
Got
near the end of it.
I just want to go back to, what Ryan and Chris have both said in the combination of that is that I'll be honest, I've never felt pain like it when we lost Kelly. I can't compare anything in my life to what I felt when we lost Kelly. And going back to what Chris said about sitting at the top of that hill, I genuinely mean this, not patronising at all, but the fact that you've come back from that, because you are at the top of a hill at 3 o'clock in the morning, as Dan said, it's basically yesterday to some people because it's the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You're on your own and you've come back from it. I just think fair play to you because, that's an understatement, isn't it? But it's like I said, though, I don't know what you lot think about that feeling.
It's in your darkest hour, isn't it?
Feeling of pain. I just, for me, it might not be the same for you guys, but for me, I've just never felt.
I can guarantee you now that there are things that I felt, instances that I went through by myself that I have never to this day shared.
Yeah.
And I will never, ever share it. Because I'm in a good place at the moment, but I would never, I just wouldn't share it. Hats off to you, Chris, for sharing that, because it's not easy to be able to say something like that and be open and honest.
And that's, for me, like, especially with Red Nose now, like, that's probably the one thing that I'm most passionate about.
What's Red Nose? Because is it the same as ours over here? I'm assuming it's not.
No.
Yeah, so Red Nose is the leading charity in Australia on providing education around safe sleeping practices. And there's also a bereavement section, and I'm part of the bereavement side. Or my role is within the bereavement team. The newly bereaved parents, sort of within that first 6 months, they're the ones that I want to, you know, that I'm probably the most passionate about helping, and dads as well. You know, because I know how like, I know those feelings of isolation and just feeling like no one gets it and all the rest of it. And just being that person there for someone to listen to and then maybe providing the right direction or the right pathways for them to get help is massive. And also I think me telling my story or parts of my story is massive in, I think, for men in particular, just knowing that they're not alone and the feelings that they've had there are not the, like, other people have been there before. And to be honest, at the time when I was in that situation, I knew that people hadn't been there before, and I was just so, you know, in my own head that I didn't necessarily care about that.
Chris, yeah. It's really that sort of hit me straight away where you've said the not alone. And my thing was never feeling alone in person. I felt alone in thought. I felt alone in the respect that nobody understood how I was feeling.
Yeah.
I didn't feel alone as in there was nobody around me, because there were plenty of people around me, friends,
not being understood.
It was more of a, I feel alone because nobody else understands what I'm going through apart from Amy. Yeah. Nobody. Matt, how many times have we sat in the office and said, and this is nothing against people who haven't lost a baby, but you never ever understand it unless you've been through it.
I was about to address that elephant in the room. Yeah,
and it's the same. I think it's the same in anything, you know, maybe people that have had cancer and families, and you never understand it unless you've truly been through it yourself, doing it, lived experience.
You've mentioned it in the version of like someone who's got a qualification, versus someone who hasn't, but they've got the lived experience.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that contrast, isn't it?
And that's why our one-to-one service is so good, is because, and I'm not just blowing smoke up our own arses, is that nothing beats being speaking or relating to somebody that's got that experience, because it's lived experience. They can give their experiences as of the people that they've seen as well, and they build up it's almost like a... What's the thing I'm thinking of? It's like a...
rite of passage in a way.
Yeah, and almost like a toolbox of ability to be able to help people.
And it's that talking. Again, I'm going to ask you a question, because it doesn't matter. We've been doing this podcast, what, three and a bit years now?
Four.
Four and a bit. So I'll learn to count one day. I can't believe it's that. But
he never gets
and what it is, I know, right? And considering the reason why we're doing it, and you work it every day, and you've been really busy today... But I can't recall a time where, and this is through talking and listening, where we finished an episode and we walked out the door and you two haven't been like laughing and joking in a good mood. Even if like so on the way in at the end, you know, if you're like, oh, I can't be bothered tonight, so I'm a bit tired. Yeah, it's like the point I'm emphasising is just communicate in any way. Even if it's not talking, it's just listening. Being in that room, having that something, just, you know, so it's not on your own.
Yeah. We've chosen this as well though, haven't we?
Well, yeah, yeah.
We like, yeah. And this is what myself and Amy always said from day dot, is that we were going, as soon as we lost Lily, we were going to dedicate our lives to helping other people because of how shit it was.
Yeah.
And helping people who inevitably were going to experience baby loss, because baby loss isn't going to stop. It's even with funding, even with medical advances, it's never going to stop. You're always still going to have baby loss, the same as you're always going to have cancer, the same as you're always going to have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, whatever it may be, it's always going to be there. We do what we do because we put ourselves in that situation to do that. And yeah, you're right, it does help. And, you know, we listen to a lot of people, we've spoken to a lot of people, and we've listened to a lot of stories, some of the worst stories you can possibly hear, and then some that maybe aren't the way, you know, they're just sadder, if you like. I say sadder, I don't mean like, you know, I'm not comparing one person's devastation to another's, but one can be
how their coping
paths and stuff like that. Yeah, so we just build a toolbox, which we're able to dig into that toolbox with whoever we speak to be able to offer support in whatever way they need it.
I used to... it's kind of not on topic, but like at the time, you don't know the worst that you've been through is the worst that you've been through. And like what I mean by that is, I used to go to support groups, which were through Sands over here, which is now Red Nose as well. And, you know, at the time in 2018 when we'd had our first miscarriage, I remember a lady talking about her son that had died of SIDS, and I walked out of that meeting thinking, fuck, you know, I'm not the worst one off here.
Mm.
And then four years later, I'm in that same chair talking about, you know, our experiences and the birth trauma and everything else like that. And it's just, it's weird how life, you know,
cyclical nature of it, isn't it? You've gone from there. Yeah.
But also
in the grief, like my dad died when I was 23, and then Liam died when I was 33, and the grief around the two just completely different and just almost like uncomparable in a way.
I was just about to say we compare and contrast a lot, like where you were saying there with regard to the lady, the person that you spoke to who had lost their baby to sudden infant death and you having miscarriage. It's hard not to compare and contrast when you're in that situation, because you do naturally question yourself saying, shit, should I be here? Yeah. But then that's what I mean, is everybody's story, everybody's situation is completely unique to them. And what is devastating for one person, there's no need to compare and contrast with somebody else, because it's your experience that you're going through at that time and your want, which is a baby.
Yeah. Chris, have you learned, obviously you have you surprised yourself over the way that you've grown into this role that you now find yourself in as a result, obviously, of the loss with Liam, and how you talk to people, like you say, who a few years ago, that would have been you in the other chair.
Yeah, it's a weird one, you know, like I reflect a lot, and like especially at this time of year, you know, you reflect on the last 12 months that you've had and all the rest of it, and I definitely know that I've matured a hell of a lot. I started a touch football team of bereaved dads at the start of last year, and I realised, you know, through talking to those guys that hearing other people's stories and things that they've gone through, it doesn't necessarily, like, it doesn't affect me. I can just more relate to what they've, you know, to what they've gone through and what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So I surprised myself in that regard that, you know, I can take on a lot more of people's situations than what I thought I would. And you know, that's just through life experiences as well.
What's your blowout then, Chris? What do you do? Like, because we obviously all, like myself and Matt more so than me now, in the respect of the one-to-one work that he does, where he sees bereaved parents every day. And there becomes a point where you've got to have that blowout. You've got to do something for you that takes your mind away from that. What do you do?
Yeah, exercise and routine. I do triathlon training. Like, I really enjoy the structure. So just routine is massive for me. And I've got two jobs that are very, very different. So those opposites are helpful as well. And, you know, my dog, like, just being around my dog, you know, I love every second with her, like being around my wife, living near the coast, like living near the water. We scattered Liam's ashes at sea, so that the ocean for me is like massive connection.
Mm.
And whenever I'm around the water, you know, I just feel like I'm around him. So yeah, they're probably the main ones.
Mm.
Structure and discipline, isn't it? And routine, as you said, they're huge, aren't they? You just need that. And
absolutely.
How long did the drink, you know, with the drink, because I also read, did we talk about this? Because you got part of the addictions with that is going down these rabbit holes, these distractions, as we refer to them. It was also, was it gambling? You mentioned you got quite,
I just money in general. Like, I wasn't,
Would you?
You know, I wasn't putting our mortgage repayments through the pokies or anything like that. But I didn't really care about the consequences
right.
in terms of,
yeah,
you know, drinking and, yeah. Like, I love sport. So sitting there watching the sport, having a bet, I just didn't care, you know, where I was taking that money from to go and stuff like that. But that was less of a problem. Like, the drinking was definitely more of a problem.
Would you gamble after you drank, or was it, like, did they go hand in hand?
Yeah, well, more or less, yeah. And the problem is these days, you know, everything's on your phone. Like, you can get access to anything, you know, like fucking betting on table tennis in the Czech Republic. Like, I just...
It's... Czech Republic table tennis.
I'm also 30, like, I'm in my mid-30s, you know. Those decisions stop with me. I don't have to engage in that crap. If I don't want to, so it's, you know, you've got to take ownership of your
I remember during COVID, I was missing football that much that I ended up watching the
he was betting on FIFA.
No, yeah, basically no.
For the computer game.
Yeah, there was only one league in the world, and it was somewhere like Bolivia or somewhere. I was watching the Bolivian third division at one point because I was missing football that much. I was watching, literally, was watching it on a betting app. I wasn't even betting on it. I was just watching the game, and I was like,
yeah.
And I had a word myself. I was like, what are you doing, man? And to be fair, some of them are better than West Brom. I mean, it's not very difficult, is it? You know, like, and I was going to start supporting them instead. Like,
was it definitely? But I'm just wondering how, but they managed to get away with it all.
No, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, but it's
no
true.
No crowd.
Didn't have some fuckwit prime minister fucking the country over. That's why.
That's true. But again, it's just playing into those. Like Ryan said, everyone needs their downtime, especially with the jobs that you do. So every single day is the moment you wake up, moment you go to sleep, and just having those things which stimulate you mentally. And we've discussed before. It doesn't mean that even if your other half doesn't like it. Right, you know, as long as they can understand and acknowledge that this is something that you need to do for a certain amount of time, and this is going to be good for you, it's going to be good for your head, and it's going to put you in a better place, even if it is watching the Bolivian third division on a phone on a betting app when you're not even having a bet.
I mean, that was only COVID, like, I don't do it now.
To emphasize the point,
I think one of the big things that, for example, after the podcast tonight, I've got a Ricky Gervais podcast that I listen to because it's light and it's happy and it makes me.
Yeah.
And it brings me back, like, do you know what I mean? It centers me again, sort of thing. So you're right.
Humor's massive.
You do have to have certain things in your life that you know you can go to. There's no question about it. And if you've got them, even if they're just a couple of things, then I think it's the balance, isn't it? It's the absolute balance. It really is. And everyone needs the balance, you know? And whatever they're going through, whatever you're going through, everyone is going through something. So if you can have that balance, it's when you don't have that balance and you are... focused on that thing that is hurting you, that's when it starts to become an issue, right?
Kelly Jean-Philippe, again, from Philadelphia, one of our ambassadors, been on the show many times. He says first that every day when he gets home, first thing he needs to do is go and lock himself in the toilet for 10 minutes. Doesn't mean he hates his family. He just needs to have them 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's what it is. Probably sat on his phone watching the Bolivian third division. What's your relationship like with your close friends?
Yeah.
Were you talking to them? Were they supporting you?
Better now. I felt a bit of neglect in that regard. And you know, I think at the time too, you're so hot under the collar that it doesn't take much to really, you know, get under your skin and rattle you. And a lot of my closer mates, you know, they've got little kids and typically as men, just they don't know what to say. So they say nothing, and like that doesn't help. But I also didn't speak about how I was feeling either. I just thought, oh, they're not fucking here for me. You're dead to me type thing. And, and you know, just sort of like had that fire and was like real hot under the collar and everything in that first 12 months. And this year in particular, now that, you know, I've calmed down a lot and accepted life a little bit more, I'm just trying to make make right the wrongs that I did in parts. And I think only like you can, you've got to own your shit in life, you know, whether you make good choices or bad choices. And, you know, I didn't know how to put my feelings into words at the time. So I was just like, you know, fuck yous, see yous later, you know, type thing. And looking back now, I wish I had my time over, but you don't get that, you know.
Ryan and Matt were both nodding all the way through that. I think it's especially with that, how easy it was just to get triggered by something, and it just something rile you up. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And
it's not their fault. Like, it's not their fault. I'm going through what I'm, you know, what I'm going through. And yeah, I guess now, because I'm so open about speaking about how I'm feeling too, you know, a couple of different mates have reached out to me, and you know, to know that I'm helping them sort of deal with their own stuff, that's massive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's great feeling to know that, you know, you can, just through being yourself, you know, you can have a positive impact on people.
Mm. You've said it a few times yourself, just the way that you own, and it's such an important thing to do. The good, the bad, the ugly, the mistakes, own your shit.
It's a different set of circumstances for everyone.
Yeah.
Like a few mates, sort of three weeks after Liam died, just before I went back to work, few mates came up and we had pretty much three nights on the drink, and didn't talk about Liam once. And that was their way of sort of, you know, taking me away from, you know, my problems and everything. But they, like, I wanted to be around Beth first and foremost. Okay. You know, because she, a few weeks before that, you know, she had just lost a shit ton of blood, you know, through the Caesar, and was still in like a huge amount of pain. But they didn't know. They thought that was best for what I needed and wanted at the time. But it's also, it's a tricky one, you know, because at the time you just want to speak about what you've gone through, you know.
Mm.
Like, I want to talk about, you know, my son and the things that we've been through, as much as non-lost parents want to talk about their living kids and everything like that. So it's a real tricky one. But then when bereaved parents have that feeling of sort of isolation and no one gets it, no one wants to know, blah, 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 it's real hard.
Mm.
There's no right or wrong approach, though.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
How is Chris Wood in this present moment, and, you know, where mentally and looking forward?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm probably mentally the best that I've ever been. Since Liam died, definitely. I'm better. I'm usually, like, especially at this time of year, I'm very much a Grinch. I really like hate Christmas and the happiness and all the rest of it that comes with it. But This year I've got a bit more to be grateful for. You know, I love that wolf analogy. You know, you've got the good wolf on, you know, on one shoulder, and you've got the you know, you've got the bad wolf, and like whichever one you feed, that's the one that, you know, wins out. And there's been plenty of times where I've fed that you know, that negative wolf. But just, you know, as you get older, I guess you mature a little bit, and I'm just sort of get to a point where I'm just like sick of being down in the dump. So it's the only way to change that is to,
brilliant,
you know, bring things into your life that make you happy and make you satisfied.
We would love to get you back on at some point. You can join us on an episode with another guest. You can come back on down the line and, you know, have a catch up. You can come on for our Baby Loss Awareness Week episodes. We just want you to come back on, Chris. You know, that's what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
Whenever you want, I think you're brilliant. And I think this is going to offer, it's horrible to be in that position in the first place, but It's there for people. Yeah. And that's the point of this.
Yeah.
Because men don't talk enough. Yeah. We talk a lot of bollocks, but we get to the point in the end, as we always now say. And we very much appreciate you coming on, Chris. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, boys. And, you know, I appreciate you guys. And I said off air that, you know, like the banter, I think is massive. And I've done a lot of podcasts, and, you know, some I've done perform better than others and had a better way with words. But, you know, like what you guys do, like with the banter and that, it's a lot less, you know, heavy and doom and gloom. And yeah, I love it. You know, I love the way that you guys get along and everything. And it helps that you're mates, obviously. But
oh, we're not mates.
Yeah,
we're
I think it shows in the episodes. I think it shows in the episodes.
Yeah. Chris, we'll let you get away. It's, what is it, 6 a.m. half 6 in the morning there now, so we'll let you crack on.
I'm going to bed.
Yeah, Ryan's off. Yes.
I'm going to go for a swim.
Are you going for a swim? Me and Matt are going to follow each other down the M6, phoning each other, moaning about roadworks for the next hour and a half. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This has been the Still Parents.
That's dedication.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Yeah.
This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Globals. Make some noise. And until next time, take care of yourself, and we will be back very soon.
Bye-bye.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals. Make some noise. Click details in the description to find out more.